Welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. The center is celebrating 25 years of service in 2009. This edition of the Bioethics Channel is the first of several programs that will take a look back at the center's work, while also looking forward to the ethical challenges of the next 25 years. Joining us now is an individual who has worn several hats for the center as volunteer, staff member, board of directors. I'm probably leaving something out, but let's welcome Helen Emmett. Hello, Helen.
Thank you, Laurel. Thanks for having me today.
Now, how did you find out about the center and what drew you to its mission?
I was an ICU nurse at Research Medical Center for several years and decided to explore the topic of philosophy and meaning of life and that sort of thing, and ended up taking some courses from Hans Uffelmann, who was one of the founders of the center. And in one of my courses, I wrote a paper, and he made some comments, and at the bottom he wrote, "You must get to know Myra Christopher at the Midwest Bioethics Center." So that's what I did.
Now, you've been involved with a number of projects with the center over the years. One of those, Trusting Our Differences, being one of those projects. Tell us about that program.
Yes. As a nurse, I had done several projects for the center, a nurse leadership project. I worked on Caring Conversations, the advanced care planning booklet that we use here at the center. And Myra had helped ethics committees become trained in several areas. And one of the areas about, I guess it's been not quite 10 years ago, that was presenting dilemmas had to do with cultural diversity and end-of-life issues. And so the consortium, which is the group of ethics committee leaders who would gather, and with Myra's leadership, came up with a plan for us to explore what dying well meant to people of diverse backgrounds in Kansas City. So, you know, caller ID, I forgot to look at that, and Myra called again, and so here I was back at the center. We had a grant from the Kellogg Foundation and a matching grant from the Wyandotte Health Foundation to explore cultural diversity and end of life, and it was an exciting but a very difficult project to manage.
Now, what made it so difficult? There were some things as you got into it that you decided to take a little bit of a different direction, didn't you?
Yes. We started out thinking that, well, how you learn from diverse populations is to invite them to come to your meetings and tell you about themselves and their backgrounds and their values and beliefs. Well, that was a little bit awkward because there would be 30 professionals in our, you know, all hospital bow tie, white jacket regalia, and we would invite people of diverse backgrounds to come and allow us to ask questions. It turned out to be maybe an exercise that could be interpreted as objectifying people of diverse backgrounds and also kind of using them as a means to an end, which we were hoping that in the end we learned something, but it just was awkward, and it wasn't quite right. So we had to reframe that and reframe our methodology and come up with something that didn't ask them to come on our turf, but took us to their turf. And so that was the first major step.
So you had to go out to them instead of having them come to you.
Right. And the Trusting Our Differences, that name grew from our lessons learned because they needed to trust us and our differences, and we needed to trust them and their differences. And we needed a bridge that helped us with that trust. So we partnered with four service organizations, social service organizations in Wyandotte County to help us build that bridge of trust.
As I was reading about this program, I came across an interesting statement about how as we were trying to come to a specific result and asking them about death and dying within their culture, they were more interested in talking about their collisions, and I'm quoting, using that word, their collisions with the healthcare system.
Absolutely. What we did and how we found, really, how we got to the meat of what we learned was by partnering with these service organizations. We partnered with El Centro to ask them to tell they actually would find people in their community with whom they had worked with. They would tell them about our project, and they would come to El Centro, one of their buildings, one of their community service areas, and we as a small group would go and ask questions with a translator in this area of safety for them. What we found was not so much the differences as far as their culture, but incidents that had happened where they had literally had a collision with the healthcare system, where something about their culture was disregarded or not embraced, and it affected them at the time. And there were lessons for us as healthcare providers to learn from. So El Centro was one of those organizations, the Black Healthcare Community Coalition, Catholic Charities, and then there was a parish nurse at a church in Wyandotte County who had a program for the homeless. So those were our four areas of diversity.
And some of the stories that were communicated to you were pretty difficult. I've heard stories that Myra would say, and then I've heard stories from you about some of the stories just were something that made all of us uncomfortable, but at the same time were reflective of how difficult it was for people of different cultures to get the kind of health care they deserve.
Right. We interviewed with specific questions. And really, the power became not the answers to the questions, but the stories that were given to us from families in these communities. The stories were difficult to hear. Example, and the narratives are available through this tool that we ended up publishing. The narratives were, these collisions were very powerful. They were painful also because those of us who were sitting there asking the questions knew that the Cinderella slipper could fit on occasion for all of us also. Just little areas of overlooking or disregarding something. Maybe we were compliant and we did everything that we're required to do, but maybe we missed the mark with, an example might be a young girl who had, she was probably 12 or 13, and she had suffered an aneurysm and ended up in one of our hospitals here in Kansas City, and her family only spoke Spanish because she was the only English-speaking person in the family. So emergent care was provided, and she was transferred to the ICU, and eventually the physicians and nurses knew that she had suffered a brain injury and would not regain cognitive function. And because it's emergent care, really with compliancy, you're only required to provide enough communication to take care of the patient's emergent problem. What happened was there was communication within the hospital that her organs would probably be of benefit to other patients. And so somehow there was a lack of regard for communicating this to her parents other than through a Spanish document that was laid in the room. And so the family then knew the futility of their daughter's situation by reading Spanish documents asking if they would like to donate her organs. So there was never a bad intention here. There was compliancy and there was work to do the right things, but without the finesse and the appreciation for the lack of English that could have been handled differently.
So with all of this work that developed a tool that medical professionals could use to address or at least identify perhaps their discomfort with treating this population.
Yes, what ended up after over a year of collecting narratives and learning is that we learned that to find out and publish the values that people have at end of life would not be easily taken off the shelves unless healthcare providers were asked to look introspectively at their own moral differences, at their own biases, at their own unique and personal values that they bring to their professional work. And so what we ended up doing was changing our direction from a publication that would specifically say Hispanics prefer this at end of life, African Americans have these issues, or homeless people need this in regards to death and dying, or Laotians prefer that Eastern religion be considered. That's what we had hoped, a neat and tidy package of cultural values and things that we could publish and teach. What we learned is that they wanted to be treated respectfully, and that the barrier to that was the bias of the healthcare provider. So how did we break down that bias? And it was through utilizing the narratives to ask healthcare providers to look within themselves individually and maybe work within committees to break down those barriers and those bias so that you would not overlook or work only for compliance, that you would work for moral and ethical care at a very high level.
How did that affect you as a medical professional? Did it change how you approached your work?
It changed how I teach, and that's what I do now. I teach nursing and nursing ethics, and I teach students here at UMKC in Kansas City. What it did for me was change my approach. Instead of teaching a cookie-cutter approach to cultural diversity, I teach more cultural sensitivity. And I use narratives because they're effective, they're real, and they're different than a book that is general. So I teach through narrative now.
Now, with healthcare reform on the horizon, apparently these kinds of issues will become more and more important as we wrestle with that challenge.
Well, I think they will become, a couple of things come to my mind. One is partnering with other service organizations, whether you're a hospital or a clinic or a hospice. How do we work together? And this methodology worked for us to partner with trusting organizations. And so maybe that's a methodology that could be explored and used by a lot of people. And as we lose funding in parts of hospitals or home health agencies, maybe partnering is something we can learn. And we did this in this project. The other thing is that we are going to have more people who might look different than the insured, who come with an insurance card and look maybe the way that most healthcare providers look. So how do we trust them and take care of them, and how do they trust us? And so I think it will become more important as the economy worsens and maybe more people who are insured become uninsured.
Your viewpoint on what the center has meant to you and what it will mean in the future?
Well, I think a huge thing for me as a nurse is that I realized that to push a pause button for me as a nurse and most teams that are functioning in healthcare organizations is very hard. We have patients who enter our systems and we know what we can do for them and we move quickly. And the center taught me that the worst thing to do is to not pause and reflect and partner with the values of the patient. So that's probably the most important thing that I've learned, no matter what project I'm working on or what patient I'm taking care of or what class I'm teaching, is to teach respect for others and to partner. And I think in the future, this partnership philosophy will become even more important. And whether we're partnering with life science organizations that are doing very fancy stem cell projects or genetic manipulation or whatever, or if it's small organizations that are doing services free of charge, not-for-profit, clinic work in Kansas City, or even projects where people are getting hospice care. I think that the center's future is vital to ethical and moral care in Kansas City.
Helen, we appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
For more information about the center's 25 years of practical bioethics, go to practicalbioethics.org. You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. I'm your host, Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.